What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
This thing a weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. You might notice immediately that I sound a little stuffed up, and it's because I am, more than just a little. I literally cannot take these paper towel wads shoved up my nose right now out, or I would snot all over this microphone, which would be really gross. I hate recording when I am like this, but alas, time waits for no one. So here we are. I want to talk about race relations after the George Floyd incident and all of the insanity going on right now. Of course, everyone's talking about it. It has completely ruined the joy of TikTok, to be honest, because every time I swipe up, it's another video about rioting, looting, and George Floyd. And I'm down for the videos about George Floyd because that's a real thing. But the rest is bunch of nonsense, in my opinion. So we'll get to that. But first, don't forget that our membership is live. We are about halfway out of our first 50 Tumblr, and the competition is underway. We do have a competition going on with the Tumblr where our members can either take a photo or a video with the Tumblr. The Tumblr has to be in it, of course, and the most creative, interesting, and or just downright crazy will win in the end, prize to be determined. And in fact, I know what the prize is. I just have to look it up because I forgot. Give me 1 second here. I'm going to jump on Discord, which is our chat service, and we'll see what I put out there as to what goes to the winner of this challenge. I have posted one picture so far, and it is an open contest at this point. Our members who have the Tumblr already can post as many pictures or videos as they want, and we'll go through them at the end and pick a winner. Okay, so the Fearless Tumblr Challenge. Best photo or video in with the Tumblr in it wins the Gen 2 Tumblr. Yes, there will be a second Tumblr once the first 50 are gone. A Badge Life t-shirt. A guest appearance on the show. Yes, your very own episode featuring you, if you dare. A $50 Visa gift card. And your photo, dare I say, your legacy, forever being enshrined on our website and all social media accounts that we currently have ownership of or to. Also, legendary status, whatever that is. Again, the winner will be picked on your level of creativity, audacity, or pure outrageousness. So go big or go home. It will end once all 50 Tumblrs are in the hands of our members. Of course, if you are a little bit slow to the party and you are, you know, maybe number 45 or even the 50th to get the Tumblr, well, I'll say 49th. Because I did acquire my own personal first 50 Tumblr, since technically I am a member and I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't see these pictures and videos, or pictures rather, at that time, of the Tumblr in our members' hands and not be able to partake myself. So I have one now. But yes, you post your videos, your photos, and we will give those last few members probably a month or two to get their entries in so that they have an opportunity to do something crazy if they want to, and then we will pick a winner. So, and of course, that is for our Fearless membership tier, which is our top tier. We have two other tiers as well. All of them get you access to our private chat server, which is so far for me, and I don't know about our members, but for me, it's been the best part of the membership as a whole, and you can see what all of the tiers have to offer over at Patreon, patreon.com, and by searching Police Academy Podcast, you'll find everything there. That's patreon, patreon.com. Okay, Let's see. Any other notes that I have? No, I think we will just jump into this episode. I have a very rough outline for this. I wanted to kind of keep it pretty natural. I think most people have been having... My voice is driving me crazy. I'm sorry. It's probably driving a lot of you crazy as well. I sound like an idiot. There's nothing I can do at this point. So I apologize. I know everyone or most people have been having conversations about George Floyd and beyond to infinity, right? Like it never ends at this point. And so I wanted to keep this pretty natural because I feel like the best way for me to talk about this is with maybe a few bullet points so I don't forget some things I wanted to touch on, but just keep it very conversational. So here goes nothing. I will try not to stop and make any cuts because that is I'm too much of a, like, too meticulous sometimes, and I don't like mistakes, so I go back and do retakes like 100 times for something stupid that doesn't really matter. So I will try not to do that. I really can't do that because I don't have that much time. So let's go. First, I have to say this Kaylee, I don't know how to say her last name, which is sad, but McKinney? I don't know. McKinney. It's weird. It's hard to say that. She's the press secretary of the White House right now. She is terrifyingly, I can't say words with this thing shoved up my nose, terrifyingly brilliant. I just watched a live press conference with her, and she needs to run for president, is all I'm saying. Like, this chick she is off the charts intelligence-wise. Like, she's insane. Her responses are so well-prepared, but so natural. She does not miss a freaking step, a beat, whatever it is. She doesn't miss. She's a killer, stone cold killer. I would not want to be in that press room asking ridiculous questions, as most of them are at this point, of her. She just destroys. In any case, that's a bit of a tangent, but I would recommend watching this last press briefing, because especially for the law enforcement community, it was pretty stellar. If you contrast that with what we had during the Obama administration, and we're not here to talk about politics. I don't care who you voted for. It won't go into who I voted for, but for law enforcement and for a lot of just good, hardworking people who believe in the rule of law and believe that most police officers are good people, that is about as stark of a contrast as you can have. What she said and how she defended our peace officers in their, defended their right, first of all, to defend themselves when dealing with rioters and looters, and stood up for the officers who have died this year, for all of those still in uniform who are being looked at by a lot, far too many Americans, and being... having dispersions cast upon them by the mainstream media and so many others right now. And they literally stick their neck out every night and every day to protect the people who are treating them this way. And she did a phenomenal job of highlighting that fact and not backing down and letting the media try to paint a picture, for example, that there is systemic racism within our criminal justice system. She was asked that several times. She did not back down. She did not concede that this is a fact. She didn't say that it's not. So she was honest in that regard, because does anyone really know if there is quote unquote systemic racism within our criminal justice system? I don't. I'm open to that idea, but you're going to have to actually like convince me with actual facts and data and logic, right? Like, it's not about how you feel. It's about, can you prove this? Okay. Again, I'm open to the possibility of that. But what she did was basically kind of a bit of a sidestep, but you kind of have to at that point because you can't, no one knows for sure. And it, she was extremely brilliant. I'll just put it that way. So I highly recommend you watching that last press briefing. It's June 3rd. It was live about, I'd say, 4 o'clock-ish Eastern time, if that gives you a better idea of when that went live. I'm sure you could find it online in many places. I'm fighting a sneeze right now, so I apologize. Whew. Beat it. A one. Okay. Moving on from our press secretary, who, again, I believe should run for president. I mean, if she ran as an independent right now, she might have my vote. I'm just saying. The Floyd case. The Floyd case was easy. I already did an episode on that. I mean, gosh, as far as police use of force incidents go, the ones that we've reviewed on this show, I mean, that one is ridiculously easy. I said it in that episode. There is no, absolutely no justification or excuse for doing what that officer did. Absolutely not. And in this one case, I mean, the public, people who don't really know what they're looking at when it comes to use of force and police trying to take people into custody, as well as the law enforcement community and professionals who deal with this stuff every day. We're all on the same side of it. Yeah, there's a few onesies and twosies who just, I don't know. I don't know where these people come from. There's always those people, right? There's always those idiots that are they're going to take the other side. I don't know why. But 99% of the people out there were on the side of George Floyd. Absolutely. Everyone's on the side of this officer should rot in prison for the rest of his life. And it was unjustified. It was murder, at the very least manslaughter. That's a legal technicality. But in the either way, it was wrong. It was unjust. It was police brutality. It was, you know, all those things, right? Now, where people, of course, are going to get into an argument is, was it an example of racism? That's one tier of that argument. And I voiced my opinion on that in the last episode on, or rather in the episode that I talked about the George Floyd incident. And that is, we don't know for sure, right? Like you can't, I am always against implying motive on other people or assuming motive of other people, looking at people's actions and going, you did that because without a very strong evidence to prove that you, you know, just like in the court of law, there are times where you have to prove motive, right? Because motive is a part of the crime. First degree murder requires you to have premeditated malice and intent to kill the person that you killed. So you have to prove they intended, that they had motive. They wanted to kill and planned ahead of time to kill that person. Well, for me, whenever we're talking about the actions of other people and I won't say judging, but a lot of people are just flat out judging, right? So I guess it's not a bad term to use here, but judging other people, I don't and will always stand on the side of, I am not going to assume your motive unless I have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to prove what your motive was. And I haven't dug too deeply into, and I've heard a couple of things here and there about this officer's past and comments he's made and whatnot. I haven't heard anything, you know, extreme. But at this point, with what I know, and I've talked to you guys about what I know, I mean, I see the video, right? And when it comes to that, it's obviously wrong. But beyond that, I don't know. I don't know what this guy's deal was. why he was doing that. It very well could have been racism. So that's like tier number one. Was it racism? Was it not? I don't know for sure. The next level, of course, is, well, and I think this is where a lot of Black Americans are coming from and white liberals, which is why Black Rednecks and White Liberals is a great book. If you haven't checked it out, go to Audible. Shameless plug here, audibletrial.com/Police Academy Podcast. We still are sponsored by Audible. Black Rednecks and White Liberals is a, in my opinion, must listen. I won't say read because I didn't read it. I listened to it on Audible. It was a great, great book and really opened my eyes to so much when it comes to race relations and our history in the United States. And obviously it's not the be all end all, but it is a piece of the puzzle and one that no one talks about. So, it's a great book. But wow, that one almost got me. So that second tier is, you know, is this an example of systemic racism? And I think this is, if people really sit down and think about it, this is where I think a lot of the good, honest people on the side of like the protests and whatnot are really trying to get, right? Like they feel like there is this theme that is driven by a systemic problem in our system. Excuse me while I replace nose plugs. This is ridiculous. Damn it, allergies. Also why I don't like doing video freaking podcasts, because nobody wants to see this. It's terrible. So I think that's where the conversation is intended to go, right? Like, does the system as a whole, does it, are the roots of slavery and true outright racism still pulling strings in our criminal justice system? And I think that's a valid conversation to have. And we did go there in 2014-15. You had, you know, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Baton Rouge, Philando Castile, Dallas, you know, police officers getting shot in the streets. You know, we went there at that time. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing at that time. We had a lot of people, or, you know, I even had a guy on the show who's just like, yeah, we want people to acknowledge like that, what we feel, you know, and I understand that. And I think, again, that it's a valid conversation to have when it comes to how much does racism play into the outcomes of our criminal justice system. It's an important conversation to have. And I don't know the answer. That's why it has to be a conversation, right? But in the end, it also has to be a conversation that finding the answer, rather, let's go here, finding the answer to that question, is there systemic racism, requires data. It requires research, right? Because you can't take anecdotal evidence. Yes, sometimes you can take a case and be like, this, like, you can prove that something, an outcome was wrong or unjust, and that you can also prove, or at least point to a lot of evidence to suggest that it had to do with racism in individual cases. Absolutely. I 100% acknowledge that racist incidents do occur, that there are still plenty of people in our criminal justice system. We're talking about the system as a whole, not just cops, right? Like, cops are only one part, one little cog in that system. That there are people who still treat people differently based on their skin color. Like, that's, to me, that's like asking if human beings have the capacity for evil. Duh. That's always going to be there. People will always treat other people who don't look and or act like them differently. There will always be prejudice, and there will always be prejudice along the lines of race as well. That doesn't mean it's okay. I'm not saying that. I'm just acknowledging a fact of our human existence. It's always going to be there. But how do we quantify that, and how do we figure out how to do something about that? Is I feel like those are the questions I want to know, right? But every time this is where we go wrong, in my opinion, where this stuff is just frustratingly in vain. When every time a black man or person is killed by a white police officer, it's immediately assumed it's because of racism and an excuse to act like these rioters and looters that are, you know, acting out all across our country. To me, I think it's very clear that that is hurting the people who, those who are carrying this out, who are, you know, we'll separate protesters and rioters and looters, right? But that's hurting these people who are protesting because they're trying to help a certain group of people in our country who they feel like are being unjustly treated and not giving an equal shot at living a good and free life in this country. When every time something like this happens, George Floyd's a just wonderful example of this. I mean, everyone was on the side of George Floyd. I don't know this guy's past at all. Like, I don't know if he was a career criminal, what the situation was. It doesn't matter. The guy should still be alive. Everyone was on that side. And again, there's differences on, okay, well, is he dead because of racism, or is he dead because the cop was an idiot and it was police brutality? Either way, it's unjust. Either way, caught rots in prison, right? But every time one of these things gets caught on video, it leads to this kind of stuff, that hurts those people that's supposed to be helping. Because it's like crying wolf, right? Like, in this case, yes, it very well could be racism, but we don't really, I'm not sure. Like, protesting, do your thing, right? Like, that's part of our democracy here in the United States. That's a staple of our democracy. 100%. I'm down. You're probably not going to find me out there on the corner. At least not now, but go for it. Like, I'm totally down. But, everyone's on the side of George Floyd. So when everyone agrees that something terrible happened and that the police officer should be held responsible, and then this happens, and you have people burning, you know, entire city blocks down, practically burning churches down, vandalizing national monuments in DC, killing police officers. That is not helping the people who they say they're helping. And in my opinion, it's not really about racial relations or racial justice or police brutality or any of that stuff at that point. And I think people need to realize, so I had some friends who apparently stopped by or drove by, I don't know to what extent they were there, one of these protests in my old hometown, or not old, but hometown of Omaha, Nebraska. And a little bit of backstory. A young, I think he's 22-year-old black man was killed a couple nights ago by a bar owner. He was shot and killed when he assaulted the bar owner. And so things are very charged in Omaha right now. And when my friends went by through this protest, you know, they're looking at it and seeing a lot of just high fives and good vibes going on, right? And so that's their perspective of this protest of goodwill, these people just banding together to fight for justice, whatever you want to, whatever label you want to put on that. So how does it go from that to what you're seeing in places like Minneapolis and DC on Sunday night? We'll get back to that. New York, a bunch of other cities across the country where, you know, buildings are being burned, people are getting seriously injured, killed, police officers getting killed, all this stuff. How does it go from these peaceful, honest protests, people trying to be heard, to that? And I think people need to realize that there are bad actors, people who believe the old adage Saul Alinsky coined, supposedly, of that no good crisis should go to waste. And I do truly believe, it may seem a bit conspiratorial, but usually things do for people who haven't really looked at things too deeply. And then once they do, they go, oh, huh, I see what you did there. I see what's going on behind the scenes. And usually there is something going on behind the scenes. There are bad actors, agitators who are guiding and pushing people to act in this way, to start the violence and the looting and all this stuff, the rioting. That doesn't excuse the individuals who end up doing it. But I think it's worth noting that an unknown quantity, percentage of the rioting and looting, the damage, the violence, is coming from people and organizations with an agenda. It's worth noting that, in my opinion. Because I think if you don't, it paints an incorrect picture of who we are as Americans, it, you know, broadly speaking. And I will say that there is also another part of that percentage, right, of the motivation behind these riots and looting is just a general undercurrent of discontent and anger and frustration. I trust me, I know what it feels like to live under a presidential administration. We all do, because it goes back and forth, and inevitably someone who is trying to do exactly the opposite of what you should think should be done with our country is in office, right? So I understand how frustrating it is to be in that position. But with this president and with this media that we have today, I think it is amplified. I think that's very clear that it's amplified. And so that undercurrent is very strong. And I acknowledge that that pent up frustration and anger, and in some obvious cases rage, is coming out in this way. It's kind of like a pressure release valve. I think that is definitely part of it. But in the end, my point is, I don't think these riots and the looting, and even a lot of these protests, are really about race relations. It's just people are frustrated, and I will point out that the media do carry much of the burden for a lot of this. On the same token that the rioting and the looting, or the rioters and the looters, are hurting the people that they purport to be trying to help, the media does the same thing. Again, going back to the book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, the white liberals come into play because they drink the Kool-Aid and they pander to these politically correct philosophies and hand-holding ideas that don't actually help the people that they say they're helping. It's all virtue signaling. Some people actually think they're helping, you know, minority communities or whatever it is, but they're being used as pawns. and they'd rather look like, you know, hey, I did this thing for this black community in my area, therefore I'm not racist, right? Like, it's part of the game if you drink that Kool-Aid. But what they're, the end result is that that community is actually hurt, and the media is in that same boat for me. The media has hyped up so much of this talk about racism and law enforcement. They continue to ignore the actual data that shows that white police officers are less likely to shoot or kill black suspects than their minority, including black officer counterparts. That given their percentage of responsibility for violent crimes in the United States, black criminals, well, black people as a whole, are underrepresented in those that are shot by the police. That was very poorly worded. What I'm trying to say is that if you take the, we've talked about this a long time ago, this data is like, this has been here, but the media never talks about it. If you take the amount of violent crime that each group based on race and or ethnicity commits in the United States, you know, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, etc., and then you compare that, because violent crime is one of the best indicators of, you know, who's committing actual like serious criminal offenses, right? And therefore, who is most likely, most commonly coming in contact with the police. And, you know, the black community is underrepresented in police killings relative to their involvement in violent crime in the United States. And that is something that we don't talk about, that the media doesn't talk about. All they want to talk about is, you know, the emotional stuff, the anecdotal stuff, the stuff that gets clicks and headlines. And I understand it's a business. That's part of the problem. Social media has completely wrecked the news media business template, or the system as a whole. Like, their way of making money is now outrage culture, basically. And again, they're hurting the same people who they pretend that they're trying to help. And honestly, many of them believe that they're helping. They drink their own Kool-Aid. Now, okay, so I gotta come back to a couple of things we said. So when I was talking to my friends, you know, about this protest, and it sounded like it was relatively peaceful. It didn't get too crazy that night. They had some issues the night before. But one of my friends used the term, was kind of complaining, essentially, that the police seemed to be escalating the situation with their quote-unquote show of force, right? Like, the police show up in their riot gear, which, if you pay attention, it's 90% of it is protective gear, right? It is meant to keep them from dying when some jackass throws a brick at an officer's head. And this friend points out, you know, how he feels, keyword, that the police raised the temperature by their show of force, right? And I understand that. But I must point out the fact that those police officers are, you know, more than likely armed with less lethal ammunition, pepper balls, gas canisters, all that fun stuff, right? And protective gear. And for the untrained eye, i.e. 99.9% of civilians, it looks kind of scary. So if perspective is truth, okay, it's scary. That's a show of force. You're scaring me away with your plastic shields and shoulder pads. Sure. But the reality is people have no idea what a show of force is. that stuff is nerf play. That's like saying, you know, that kid just pointed and shot me with a nerf gun and I want to press attempted murder charges. No. Thank you. Come again. Let's try another. And when Trump announced in regards to DC, you know, this was really focused on DC because they're having some serious issues over the weekend. And, you know, he's basically saying, listen, and this has been his path thus far, letting the local authorities handle these situations and keeping the federal government out of it as much as possible, letting the National Guard, which is can be called up by the governor of whatever particular state they're in. He's been kind of letting them handle their own business, but that can only go so far, right? Because there are certain localities where they're too okay with nerf play and letting these riots and looters just do whatever they want. And that's not helpful to anyone. Take the young man who got killed in Omaha the other night as an example. I mean, that's, if the government isn't going to protect, the police aren't going to protect my business, well, I guess I will. And that's what happens. So when President Trump said, if you don't fix this, if you don't do something to stop this, we will. And he threatened to send thousands upon thousands, I believe were his exact words, of military troops in to make sure that things didn't get out of hand. You want to talk about a show of force? I promise you, it didn't end up having to take place because the night after that announcement, nothing happened. And I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that people actually, for once, believe something Trump said or what it is, but that is a show of force. When thousands of infantrymen roll into a city, you know, armed with M4s and all other implements of destruction. And just FYI, I think the military is all out of rubber bullets. That is a show of force. So when people say that the police and their riot gear and their pads and Nerf guns is a show of force, it's poorly thought out, if at all, because it's not. You know, police agencies can do things, I think, in ways that they can amp up a situation or they can, you know, de-escalate to a certain extent. But in the end, what I pointed out to this friend or these friends of mine, and some of them are truly, I think most, if not all of them, are really trying to find some truth in this. I pointed out the fact that it's up to the rioters, or it's up to the protesters, whether or not it stays peaceful. Right? The police are literally there to protect the public, to protect the public infrastructure and private businesses, to protect the protesters. And of course, because they are there, they have to be able to protect themselves. And that's usually where it goes wrong. Some jackass throws a brick. And then everything goes sideways. And I had to point out to that group of friends that, you know, there were valid, seemingly, reports that people had been throwing pipes and bricks at the police at that very same quote-unquote protest. And yeah, that is no longer the police's, you know, when things get amped up, it's not because the police were standing in the spot they were standing in. It's because people started getting stupid and lashing out at the police officers, at which point they're going to defend themselves. Our press secretary just pointed that out very clearly several times, because apparently reporters have to be told five times before they will believe anything, that police officers do in fact have a right, in fact a duty, to protect themselves. All right, so let's talk about a couple of things that have come up quite frequently, or we're seeing a lot right now when it comes to like rioting and looting and all this stuff. You know, first, the young man who died in Omaha, Nebraska. I believe it was James Spurlock. Don't quote me on that. Give me one second. I think it was James. Yes, James Spurlock. Sorry, not Spurlock. Skurlock. James Skurlock. Skurlock. 22-year-old young man. He's black. And it was, I believe, over the weekend. You know, the looting was starting, or had been going on for some time. I'll post a link to the video of it in the show notes. But basically what happens is a white bar owner and his elderly father, along with several other individuals, one guy looks like he's probably a bouncer at the bar, they're just standing outside the bar, kind of hanging out, making, you know, the window's already smashed in, there's glass everywhere. They're just hanging out, trying to, it appears, to kind of make their presence known, like, hey, we're here, like, no one mess with my business, at least anymore. And you see some looters jump over a fence. It's like front patio. It's in like downtown Omaha, so it's wide sidewalks, and there's like fences where people can like sit outside of these establishments and eat and hang out, whatever. You see somebody jump one of those fences and run toward a business, kind of like off toward the top of the screen in the black, and you can't really see what's going on. But the elderly father like kind of walks down the street, and who knows what he's saying to these people. But at some point, he kind of gets into a little shoving match and is pushing an individual away from him. And some dude comes running across the street at full speed and just de-cleats this guy. And like I said, he's an elderly guy. I mean, I don't know exactly his age, but he is a senior citizen, it appears. And he literally gets de-cleated. I mean, he's off the ground, flying through the air, and lands. And it had to hurt. So at that point, the bar owner runs up there. And there's several different angles of this video, but in one, you can hear him saying, I'm just trying to figure out who hit him. So he's trying to find out, like, who just did that to my dad, right? Like, that's reasonable. And that conversation goes on for a little while, it seems. And then you can see only part of it has audio, but you can see a group of young men, it appears, start to like encircle him. And he's walking backwards, telling them, who knows what he's saying exactly, because you can't really make it out at that point. But he's walking backwards with his hands kind of out at his sides, but up in this like, kind of like, I don't want any trouble kind of body language, right? It's very clear that he is trying to back up and avoid any sort of actual physical conflict. Then at one point, you can see in the video that he reaches to the front of his waistband. It's a very, for people who conceal carry and practice this stuff and watch videos on it, he's clearly drawing a weapon from the front, probably front right of his, you know, appendix carry. Dang, I cannot talk today. Appendix carry. He looks to lift his shirt up or grab his shirt with his left hand, and then his right hand goes to the front, kind of pops up, and then drops behind his right leg. So right there, I mean, almost guarantee he drew a handgun at that point. In one of the videos, you can hear someone who is either filming or right next to the person filming with a cell phone appears. You can hear him say, he's got a gun. It's not in those exact words, but we'll summarize. He's got a gun. He's like, he's basically saying like, dude, it's not worth it. This guy's got a gun. Basically, leave him alone, right? This is not a good idea. And in the store's video, which is the best view of what happens next, after he draws the handgun and continues to back up, this group of young men kind of encircle him further. And you can see one kind of like stutter steps at him, kind of changes his mind. I don't know what's going on in these guys' mind. Like this guy, he just drew a gun and he didn't point it at anybody. But at that point, someone drawing a handgun when they're outnumbered in a situation like that is saying, I don't want to fight, right? Like, I don't want anything to happen. I'm not pointing this thing at you. I'm not threatening you. But I can't beat you all. And if you choose to make this a fight, I am going to win it. That's, in a nutshell, what is being said without saying it right there. Who knows what he was actually saying, but he's clearly trying to back up from this confrontation. And then they do attack him. They tackle him. I think it's two guys initially tackle him. He lands in the street. They were on the sidewalk. He falls off the curb into the street, into a big puddle. And two shots are fired, you know, pretty close together. Boom, boom. First dude, two dudes take off. They jet. I don't know that he hit either one of them, but neither one of them were seriously injured. And he seems content with that. He doesn't chase him down. He doesn't try to shoot at him as they run away. It was very clearly he's trying to stop the attack, right? So he's starting to get up. He's still in this puddle in the street trying to get up off the ground. And then James Scurlock comes running in from the sidewalk and jumps on his back. And the district attorney, as he's sharing the events of these several videos, and that's the video I will link to, points out that they do have video of, or do have audio, where you can hear the bar owner yelling at him to get off of him, get off of him, get off him, basically giving him verbal commands. It's something we do in law enforcement, right? You give good verbal commands so that the person you're dealing with knows what you need them to do. And if they don't do it, then there's ramifications for that. And it's hard to tell because obviously these security cameras aren't best, especially at night. But he's on his back. So the natural like hold for that position is usually a choke. So I won't go on record as saying he's trying to choke him out, but it definitely looks likely that this individual who has the handgun, the bar owner, is getting choked to some extent. In any case, he's got somebody on his back and is rolling around in the street in a puddle. He's already fired two rounds at the other two who tackled him. And, they wrestle around for a little bit, and eventually one shot rings out and James Scurlock just crumples to the ground. The bar owner gets up, kind of gets away from him, and gets his bearings again. And then, that's it, right? And so now Omaha's got this huge additional thing going on, right? And it was protests that turned into riots and looting. And now it's protests about this incident that happened because of the riots and looting. And the district attorney very quickly made it clear that they were not filing charges because based on all of the evidence that they have, the videos are very clear. It was a clear use of deadly force in self-defense. And they've got, of course, witness statements. They've got all the audio, all that stuff, right? So, I looked at it. Kind of gave my two cents to my friends who were pointing it out, saying, hey, like, what do you think of this? Seems very clear, self-defense. But that brings us to a very good point in a very long-winded roundabout way and extremely nasally, sneezy way. Can you defend your business, your property with deadly force? The short answer is no, right? Human life is more important than your car. Human life is more important than your business, etc. You can argue, and I 100% agree, that if, barring good insurance, which you should have, your business, if destroyed, is your livelihood. It's kind of like taking a human life, but still, you're alive, and that guy's not. So it's not the same, right? And the Supreme Court has said as much. Human life is more valuable than things, no matter how expensive and nice and fancy the things are, or how important they are to your livelihood. So then how does this bar owner get off killing somebody? It is homicide, right? Homicide, killing of a human being, without being charged with some sort of murder or manslaughter. If he can't legally defend his business with deadly force, how does it work? Well, there's this, I don't know that gray area is the best way to describe it, but it's an estuary. Let's put it that way. It's where the fresh water meets the salt water. You have a right to defend your property. As a business owner, you do have a right to say, you guys need to go away. You cannot be here. This is private property, and you're not allowed here. Go away. You can do that, and you can physically protect your property, but you can't use deadly force to just simply protect your property. And that's where these two things kind of come together. Because in the process of trying to protect your property, if the person who you are protecting it from, or persons in this case, create a situation in which you, or rather a reasonable person in your shoes would fear for their life, or fear that they were about to incur serious bodily injury, then you can legally and justifiably use deadly force. So you can't use deadly force to defend your property. However, in defending your property, if someone creates the circumstances in which you have to use deadly force to escape the encounter, then you're justified under self-defense, the self-defense exemption, essentially. So and so that's where this business owner lands in Omaha, Nebraska. TikTok, as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, has been horrid lately because it's the same thing over and over again. But there was one strikingly comical video of a business owner, it seemed. He was either Middle Eastern or man from India. I'm not sure exactly, but there was a guy laying in the parking lot with cigarette packs strewn about him as this business owner points an AR-15 style rifle at him and is scolding him for trying to steal from him. And it's quite comical to watch. And so I think it's a very important question that we address, right? Like, what do business owners do? And part of it's a personal decision, right? Is it worth the lawsuits and potential time in a jail cell and potential charges that you can incur, criminal charges you can incur by having to use deadly force in the process of defending your business and then defending yourself? That's a personal decision. But it is important for people to realize what they legally can and can't do. And of course, that depends a little bit on the state you're in. But what I just described is kind of the general rule. It's dictated by Supreme Court precedents, so it's pretty much the same everywhere. Now, another question that has come up By the way, this is not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer yet. And even if I was, I'm not giving legal advice because you ain't paying me. So, well, except for our members, in which case, well, it's still not legal advice. You get other perks for being a member. Another question that came up recently is, can cops pull you out of your car? A video that another friend sent was of a vehicle, it's nighttime, where the cops are, you know, they run up to the side of the vehicle, they're giving verbal commands, telling them to get out of the car. The car is like in traffic, so it stops, and they're not complying, right? I don't know what led up to this. All I know is the cops are telling these people, hey, you need to stop, you need to get out, you need to get out, you need to get out. So the question posed was, you know, because it continues on. The cops start to try to smash out the driver window, yank the passenger out, because the passenger does either open or at least allows the door to be open, and that guy gets pulled out, and then the driver's not wanting to come out. The cops are yanking on him, yada, yada, yada. So the question was, can the police do this? Can the police yank you, physically yank you from your car? And every cop that's ever been a cop nods their head and says, hell yes, they can. Yeah, if the police have probable cause to stop your car, they have the legal authority to detain you. And if they feel it is in the interest of their safety or the safety of those around, you know, public, whatever, to remove you from the vehicle, or they need to remove you in the course of that stop, they have the authority to make that demand. And if you refuse that demand, it's game on. They're gonna ask, they're gonna tell, and then they're gonna make you. And what I pointed out to this friend, and many people in civilian life are in her shoes, is that to the untrained or inexperienced eye, when it comes to use of force situations, generally speaking, they tend to be shocking. Like shocking to the human conscience. They feel wrong when you watch them. I remember the feeling when I first started as an officer. I remember like seeing things go down and going, cringing, right? Like, oh, that's gotta hurt. And as I went along in my career and had these situations myself and learned from how things went and saw how other officers handled resistive suspects and whatnot, it became very clear that, number one, using force to take someone into custody or get them to comply is usually very ugly. And number two, it's kind of the blitzkrieg mentality, if you understand what that is, right? Like you hit them with everything you've got to end the fight as fast as possible. That does not justify using more force than you're legally allowed, disproportionate force, but within your legal bounds as an officer, using force suddenly and violently, again, that violent doesn't mean that you're hurting someone, it just means that it's explosive, right? Violence of action. I learned that using force in that way tended to be the safest, or at least from it seemed to be the safest way, usually, to use force. To get the encounter under control as quickly as possible, even if it means that guy hits the ground a little harder. Because if you try to take him down and it's a bit underwhelming, maybe he doesn't go down at all. Or maybe he goes down and can control his fall and pulls you into a wrestling match that no officer wants to be in, right? So for people who watch these things. And this is how, I mean, we saw it in 2014, 15, all of a sudden, everyone's watching these videos and offering their opinions without any sort of experience or knowledge whatsoever, other than like maybe a quick Google search or reading the comments below. And then boom, they're writing their own comments and like making their own posts and whatever. Everyone's talking about this stuff. But oftentimes they don't have any sort of context to really know what they're talking about. And it's not their fault, right? It's not, they're not trying to, they don't know they're wrong or that they don't know what they're talking about. They feel, right? The video made them feel a certain way and they want to share their feelings and opinions. And I have said this, I know many times on the show, but I'll say it again. Your opinion is only as valuable as the facts, the data, the logic that support it. Everyone has a right to their own opinion. I 100% agree in the right to voice your opinion, but not all opinions are as valuable as the other. And if you don't know what you're talking about and you're spouting off your opinions, and I'm not talking to my audience, I'm sure, there might be a few stragglers in here who need to hear this. But if that's you and you're sharing your opinion with the world and you've never been in one of these situations, you don't like this show of force, but you have never stood there and let people throw bricks at you, then you might want to consider whether or not your opinion has any value whatsoever. And whether or not maybe you should be listening more. Now, I found myself in that place when I first started this podcast. One of the main reasons I started the podcast was because I heard a very reputable, very well known, and a person that I trusted in political punditry, if you will, assess a police situation in a very incorrect way. He was flat out wrong. He was someone who I thought was right on most things. And I realized that a lot of people, even people who have an audience, are willing to opine on law enforcement situations and don't really know what they're talking about. And they don't mean to create confusion or be wrong. No one says something knowing they're wrong or doesn't, you know, make a habit of it at least. That's a big reason why I started this show. I wanted to be able to explain these things from the perspective of someone who actually knows what the hell is going on. And here we are again, right? Like, what, five, six years later, we're back in the same boat. It's a shitty boat, and it leaks. And it's sinking. I don't think this boat's going anywhere. Like I said, I think the riots and the looting and all that stuff, it's a pressure relief. It's going to, I've talked about this with the members on Discord, our private chat server. We've got several channels in there. We talk about different stuff. We've been talking about this stuff in there, and it's my favorite part of the membership because I love to interact in real time with our members and provide feedback and let our members, many of whom are already law enforcement officers, you know, talk back and forth and give each other advice and all that stuff. It's awesome. But as I mentioned in there to our members, I don't think that this is, I think once the pressure is released, the emotion subsides, and possibly most importantly, the media finds another bone, this is going to die off and just kind of blow away in the wind. But the issues of police brutality will still be there. the issue of racism is still going to be there. And the reality is the law enforcement community as a whole is always moving forward, is always getting better. Anyone that pays attention to the experts, the trainers in the community knows that. That's what we're about. We're about moving forward and being better. And we are better now than we were yesterday, last year, 5, 6 years ago, 10 years ago. We're definitely better. Can we improve? Absolutely. Of course, we will always be able to improve. But yeah, these things will still be there. And we'll find ourselves very likely in these shoes again in the near future. So a few concluding thoughts. Number one, police work is ugly. And the more people begin to see what use of force situations look like, maybe people will get used to it. I don't know. But until we figure out a way to take someone into custody without causing any pain or any injury ever, these videos will still continue to be a thing. And I'm not talking about George Floyd, like specifically. Obviously, that was avoidable on every level. I'm just saying videos that look ugly and look bad. And I think it's worth just acknowledging that, right? Like, it ain't pretty, people. Like, be a cop for a week and you'll see. You try to deal with that guy without without causing any injury, without making a scene. Good luck. Yeah. I've talked about this before too. And I rarely got into fights with people because I found a way to work around and avoid that just by talking to them, building rapport and all that stuff. Like that's a whole different story. But the reality is some people won't be talked out. It's just a fact. Some people want that fight and it's game on regardless. And it's ugly. Now, number two, sometimes cops do bad things. Again, human beings do have the capacity for evil. Suggesting that we will ever completely get rid of racism or prejudice or police brutality is just naive. It's like saying there's never going to be war ever again. It's just not reality. Human beings have the capacity for evil. And when those human beings happen to find their way into law enforcement, those individual officers screw it up for everybody else. Now, I don't know if this guy who killed George Floyd, what his intent was. Like I said earlier, I don't know if it was racially motivated or at least, he had implicit bias that caused him to treat George Floyd differently and not care that he was saying he couldn't breathe. I don't know. I don't know to what level of malice that he had when that happened. But the reality is, in the end, police brutality happens, people. It is a thing, and it happens to everybody. It's not just white cops doing it to black folks. It's every color cop doing it to every color, race, and creed of citizen. It is just a thing, and it's terrible. And those officers should be dealt with swiftly and strongly, in my opinion. Now, if we, I'll end with this. Maybe. Dang. I think I won that battle. We'll see. I'll end with this. If we continue to enable purely emotional temper tantrums and continue to push those buttons as a society, I'm talking you, media, and I'm talking to people who continue to repeat the things that they hear from the media and others. These emotional arguments. Everyone loves to be the bearer of bad news, okay? I get it. But we're hurting the people that we claim to be helping by doing that. Again, a friend said in a group text, hey, if you have, again, summarizing, if you have black friends, you need to, it might be a good idea to check in on them, see how they're feeling. And I understand, like, okay, I'll check in on them just like I check in on any of my friends, just because they're my friends and I care about them, right? But the suggestion that black people are hurting or even should be hurting more than any other group of people right now because of George Floyd caught me off guard a bit. I had to be honest. Because going back to kind of what we started talking about, everyone's on the side of George Floyd. And the emotional trauma that people are experiencing right now, I am experiencing it. As a young white man, I am experiencing emotional distress because of what's happening. Right? It's not because I'm black and I don't have that experience growing up, but I'm experiencing strong visceral emotions about all of this. But I don't base my beliefs or opinions on the way that I feel. I don't hang my hat on the things that my knee-jerk reactions to those emotions that I have in the moment. Because I recognize, as I think we all should, that we, as human beings, what separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom is that we have this higher cognitive ability. We have the ability to reason, and we should use that. So this suggestion that you should check on your black friends because they're hurting right now, I'm like, well, wait, aren't we all hurting? Like, if people are hurting, we're all hurting. Because cops are getting killed. White people are a target right now for presumably no reason. And black communities are being burnt down as well now as parts of white communities as well. This is a bit of a tangent, but I do find it somewhat funny that the rioters and looters burn down the black communities and then they go, wait, well, maybe we should go to the white part of town and burn down their businesses instead. They kind of figure that after the fact. It must be first timers. I don't know. But that suggestion to me points to that we're enabling people to wallow in their own hurt. And I'm not really about playing that game. I'm not really about holding people, adult human beings, holding their hands while they cry about how they feel about something when the thing they're crying about isn't even closely attached to reality. If you're freaking out about stuff that's on Twitter, you need to take a break and look at the people around you. I mean, today it was refreshing to go out. I went to Walmart, of all places, and the area that I'm in, I'm a minority. And, it was refreshing to go out and be around everybody, predominantly black people. And I had conversations with multiple different people while I was in Walmart. One guy saw I was getting these wood pellets for like a pellet grill. And he's like, hey, are those things any good? It must be because you're getting pellets. You have one of those grills. I was like, yeah, I have one. They're awesome. I was like, you don't have one yet, do you? He's like, no, well, obviously, duh. It's rhetorical. Making conversation. Anyways, I'm like, you don't have one, huh? He's like, no. I'm like, well, if you're thinking about it, it's a solid bet. Like, they're awesome. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, all right. My wife won't let me get one. He saw me later. He's like, yeah. Wife will let me have one. That's what he initially said. I'm terrible storyteller. He initially told me his wife wouldn't let him have one. Whoa. My screens just went crazy. I think we're all still here. And then he caught me later, happened to be near me again. And he's like, you know what? He's like, I'm going to get one. I'm going to do it. You know, I'm like, all right, man, like I won't tell your wife, but you're not going to regret it. Like she'll forgive you in a week. Right. Like it's worth it. But just nice people. Right. And it reminds me, it reminded me or reinforced something I already knew in that, like what you see out there in the media, on social media is not representative of who we are as Americans. I keep seeing these TikTok videos of the rioting and looting and fires and the police clashing with protesters and all this, or rioters and all this stuff. And a song that everyone attaches to these about, you know, saying, this is America, this is America. It's like, okay, that's in America at that point in time, in that place, but that's not America. These people don't define America. They don't define and shouldn't define our conversation about these issues. These guys are a distraction. Who's even talking about George Floyd anymore? I mean, we've been so caught up in these protests and riots and stuff. Not the protests, the riots and the looting. Everyone's talking about that. And then you have, again, like all these incidents where people get hurt or killed, cops are getting killed, protesters, rioters are getting killed. And, you know, you have an additional hurt because now there's a family in Omaha, Nebraska who lost a son, even though their son was a dumbass and attacked a guy who had already shot at his friends and had no reason and no business attacking him in the first place. Yeah, people are hurting, right? But for me, my approach is always to try to meet people. And this is where balance comes in. I'm big on balance. If you're just blindly one-sided on anything in life, you will not succeed as well as you would if you would be balanced in that area, generally speaking. I am very analytical and lean towards logic and reason and facts because I want to know the truth, the actual truth, not perspective. Perspective is not truth. It is perspective. This perspective is truth. Philosophy enables emotional reasoning, motivated reasoning, coming to conclusions and opinions based on feeling, not fact. And I'm not down for that. But I recognize that if I'm going to have a conversation with somebody who their truth is their perspective, I have to meet them at their point of perspective. And a lot of times, if not all times, that at a very minimum requires me to listen to them to figure out what their point of perspective is, what hole in the box they're looking out of, what part of the picture they're seeing, right? And from what angle. I have to meet them there and acknowledge, like, hey, I understand that the way you were raised, the life you have lived, who you are, and how you think. I acknowledge how that makes you feel, at least based on what you're telling me right now, right? Sorry, almost sneezed again. And then you move forward from there. You show that person that you care about them as a human being. and you want to understand how they feel. But from there, I'm not saying feelings are off limits. Feelings are part of being human. But from there, if we can't go into a discussion of a discussion that is based in facts and reason and logic, data, research, to figure out what's really going on, to find actual truth. If we can't touch those things in this whole conversation, if all we're going to do is sit here and listen to you because you think your opinion matters because you have a certain skin color, if that's all we're doing, I don't really have any interest in that conversation. Or at the very least, I'm ending it once I see that it's just going to be a enabling session. I know that sounds cold. Plenty of people would call it racist. It's not racist. I love all people. And I grew up this way. When I was younger, I would have said I was colorblind. Can't be anymore. Especially as you get older. But I was raised and lived and still do with the mentality, the belief that the best that any of us can do is simply love people, period. I know people point to, well, easy for you to say, you're a white man, right? Okay. We'll have that discussion for another day. But in the end, I feel like the best I can do, that anybody can do, is not assume motive, not assume they know what someone else is thinking, right? And just love people. You only hurt yourself by looking at someone else and going, ah, he just or she just did that because blank. I do it. I catch myself doing it, and not literally, but in my mind, I smack myself in the face and tell myself, knock it off and quit being a dumbass. Because I don't know what's going on in that person's head. They're probably just having a bad day. Maybe they're not. My wife, I was talking to my wife the other night about this specifically. I had an encounter with an individual who, a secretary type. I needed something notarized, and she was the gatekeeper. And she thought that I couldn't get the thing notarized that I wanted notarized for certain reasons, and she was wrong, and I knew it. But her attitude, she's a middle-aged black woman, her attitude towards me was very, very harsh from the get-go. And I'm like extremely polite and nice and just gentle in general, dealing with people I don't know. And I noticed it right away. And so I proceeded to amp my level of schmoozery up to 1,000. And it worked. All of a sudden, she liked me, and we got done what needed to be done. Now, I don't know. That works sometimes. Other people might not have worked for. But if I had assumed she was doing that, and it didn't even cross my mind at the time, if I had assumed she was doing that because I was white, then I wouldn't have gotten anywhere with her. That was the fight she was looking for, probably. If that was behind her treatment of me initially. But instead, so I treated her like any other human being. I assumed she was having a... I actually asked her. I was like, hey, you've been having a rough day? And she said no. And, you know, we started off in a conversation about this, that, whatever, kids, you know. And it turned out she had been having a rough day. And that was probably, can't say for sure, because I can't assume motive, right? But that was probably what her issue was. And everything worked out fine. Now, contrast that with someone who, you know, again, middle-aged black man, he's got some kids, and there was one point, years ago, he was talking about how he teaches this one particular kid, a daughter of his, how he's teaching her to be on the lookout, you know, at school and sports, whatever, to be on the lookout for people treating her differently because of her race. And I was appalled when I heard that, even though you think about it for 2 seconds, you realize, okay, well, that's pretty common, I'm sure. But for me, I don't see how that helps her. I'm not suggesting that one should be naive. It's, you know, again, some people won't care about my opinion because I'm a white man. At the same time, I guess if you choose not to listen because of that, then that's fine. I won't fault you for that. But if you hear out the reasoning behind this, I think it'll make sense. If we are looking, and that's why I illustrated kind of my experience with this woman who was treating me poorly, and how that could have gone a very bad way if I had assumed her motive. Assumed she was treating me that way because I was white, which is very possible. I don't think that helps anyone, especially his daughter, by trying to make her hypersensitive to, and maybe that's not the right word, but distract her from being the best that she can be with, you know, always trying to decipher people's motive. Because really, how do you? First of all, it's an impossible thing to do. You're going to be wrong probably a majority of the time, but at least a significant amount of the time when you assume someone's motive about why they did something to you. And then you're hurting yourself, right? Like if someone's having a bad day and says something kind of nasty or unnecessary to that young lady at school and didn't even know she was standing right there, right? Like just said it under her, a schoolmate says something under their breath, not even realizing this girl is standing there, and said girl takes it as that classmate hates me because I'm black. Now you just lost a potential friend and are distracted by this thing that hurts you. Because now it hurts, right? Like you're hurt by someone's hatred towards you that doesn't even exist. And I don't see how that helps anybody. Again, not suggesting you should just put your head under a rock and be naive. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if we're constantly looking, if we're encouraging people of any color to look for things like that, you shouldn't really have, to me, should you have to look for them? Like if someone has something against you, it is usually pretty obvious because you can say, hey, look, this is my performance level. This is theirs. Why are they getting this treatment and I'm getting this treatment, right? Like it's usually pretty obvious and it's not always about race or sex. Sometimes it's about personality. Sometimes you perform well, but you're a dick and no one likes you and you don't move up, right? In like corporate America, wherever it is. Works and plays well with others. Yes or no? If you're a big fat no, you might be the smartest guy in the room, but you ain't get that promotion, right? Like again, assuming motive. Where does that get us? Pretty much nowhere. It moves us backwards. And I think I'm going to end on that. We have to stop assuming we know what's going on in someone else's mind. Someone else who was raised differently, in a different culture, in a different type of home, with a different structure, who has different experiences, different pains, and vastly galaxies apart perspectives. How can you even begin to think you know what's going on in their head? We have to stop assuming. And I know it's like I'm standing on top of a freaking light tower shouting into the middle of the ocean. Like, the number of people who will listen to this and take it to heart, will that wave ever make a difference in the ocean? I don't know. But I still think it's worth saying. Don't assume you know what's going on in someone else's head. And love people, period. Be the best you can be. Love everyone you meet. And know that there's something going on, that they are dealing with something that you know nothing of. Every single person you meet is dealing with something that you know nothing about. And they just need you to love them. And these conversations about race relations, police brutality, all that other stuff has to come after you've loved that person. And they know that you care. I hope this finds everyone out there staying safe. I know many of you are on the front lines on this. You are that thin blue line right now. And please stay safe. Make sure you're doing your mental rehearsals, having a plan before things get sideways. Watch each other's back. And realize there's a lot of good people out there. Even in that crowd, that do know that the police are good and do appreciate what you do, even if they're holding a sign that says justice for George Floyd or whatever. I know it's a weird mixed bag. I vacillate between this realistic cynicism and kind of utopian hope. But I guess there's that balance thing again. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. If it's your first time listening, most episodes are less uh-ing and less nasally and sneezy. I apologize for all of the humanity in this episode. But maybe that's what we need. I don't know. I'm just trying to be real with y'all. I didn't say everything perfectly, and no doubt someone will hear something and be offended by it. That's okay. If you become a member over at Patreon, patreon.com, you can yell at me on our private chat server, continuously send me texts and drive me crazy whenever you want. It's part of being a member. So go check that out. Again, we are about halfway through with our first 50 tumblers, which gets you into the first 50 tumbler challenge. And we've got all kinds of other promotions going on right now. Our Badge Life t-shirts are still on the table. We have 10 to give away. One is going to the winner of the best photo or video in the Tumblr challenge, called the Fearless Tumblr Challenge. You have to be a member of the Fearless tier to get the Tumblr and be in the challenge. But one of our Badge Life t-shirts is going to that winner. 9 others will randomly go to... No, you know what? I've promised that if you are in the first 50 to sign up for membership of any level, you have a 20% chance of getting a Badge Life t-shirt. These t-shirts are awesome, and I'm not going to renege on that promise. And I would be if I gave one of those free 10 ones to the winner, because there's only 9 left for everybody else. So the original 10 that the Badge Life donated for this purpose will go to 10 randomly selected members of any membership tier. You can come in, just do the $4 tier. Basically the, hey, I want to be part of the discussion and, or simply support the show and, you know, in a way that's not going to be noticed on my bank statement every month, right? Even at that tier, you get entered for one of these shirts. So I'll make sure to get a Badge Life t-shirt separately for the winner of the Tumblr Challenge. And I'll probably let them pick out their own as part of the winner's package for that. So there still are 10 Badge Life t-shirts on the table for the first 50 of our members. I think we're about it. We're at 30 or in the 30s abouts. So not too many spots left for that promotion. And of course, if you don't want to wait, you should definitely go check out Badge Life. It's the best athletic or just t-shirt in general, quality-wise, that I've ever had. And it's phenomenal. And they gave me a hat too, and I love it. So go check it out, thebadgelife.com. Don't have to wait for your chance to win one. You have a 2 in 10 chance of winning. That equates to 1 in 5 or 20%. For those of you who are mathematically challenged, it's pretty good chances, really. And yeah, if you don't want to wait for that though, go to thebadgelife.com and check out what they have. And of course, I mentioned Black Rednecks and White Liberals for the 100th time in an episode. And you can find that on Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/Police Academy Podcast, I know it's a mouthful, but the link is in the show notes. All you have to do is copy it and paste it. We get a kickback. We get like $15 every time somebody signs up. You get 1 month for free, which is free $15 to you. And then we get $15. If you don't like it, cancel it. It doesn't cost you a darn thing. You can get one book on your first, you know, you get your first audiobook free. That's your first month. Every month after that, it's like $15. You get one free audiobook a month, and then you can buy more at a discount if you choose. I've got a bunch of credits right now I need to use. It's awesome. I still love Audible. I'm still going to promote them, even though we've got our own membership and all that now. And that's, you know, where our focus is. I'm not going to stop telling you about something that I really believe in, and it has changed my life. So go check that out. audibletrial.com/Police Academy Podcast. The membership for the podcast is over at Patreon, patreon.com/Police Academy Podcast. I am out of breath. I can't breathe. And I'm sure every single one of you is tired of listening to my obnoxious nasally voice by this point. So I will bid you all adieu. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing.